And we are back. It is Channel 9 Live at the lovely Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino here in Las Vegas, Nevada. And if you have questions for the Goo, Scott Goo himself, send them to #CH9Live, and we will get those to the man. How's it going, sir?
Pretty good, thanks.
Thank you for making me do all the work today.
It was pretty convenient, wasn't it?
It worked out really nicely. It was like, when am I on, sir? And you were like, about 30 seconds. How's that? That's a lot of fun. I mean, how much preparation goes into a demo like that, right? Is that all just lies and I'm just moving my hands while the video plays, or are we really doing stuff up there?
Pretty much everything. You know, everything was real today and tomorrow. But it's like a couple weeks of preparation usually. We start kind of preparing for the keynotes usually around 6 or 7 weeks out.
Yep.
And we get great demoers like yourselves, and you know, and we were here. Scott and I were here until about 7 o'clock last night doing last minute tweaks.
Yeah.
I'm now doing. I finished day one, and now I'm basically starting day two. So right after this, I got to go back to the keynote room and practice for 7 hours for tomorrow's keynote.
Really? So, that's a lot of work, man.
And I'm doing more of my own demos tomorrow. So.
Awesome.
Well, it'll be awesome when it's done. But
cool.
It will be so awesome today.
All right. So day one. What came out today? What did we release today that people can download and play with today?
Well, we showed a couple of demos for people that missed it. I'm going to do a blog post that goes sort of summarizes a little bit in terms of some of the releases that came out. But a lot of new technology. We kind of basically had four pretty cool demos. We had one on ASP.NET MVC3, mm-hmm. And specifically a new tooling update that we shipped today for MVC3 that adds a bunch of new features, HTML5 project templates, the new modernizer JavaScript library that helps you work with HTML5 within your site. We also shipped Entity Framework 4.1 today, and that's now built into MVC3, the tooling update. And then we also showed off some really cool scaffolding support inside Visual Studio that enables you to start with an EF model, whether it's built with code first or whether it's built with model first or database first, mm-hmm. And generate views and controllers and let you build data-driven sites super, super fast. So that was one thing that we sort of showed, and that's now available for download. We also showed off some really cool web matrix demos that kind of highlighted how you can use web matrix and Razor and SQL CE to build a site. Mm-hmm. We showed off Orchard, which is our CMS and blog application framework. It's built with ASP.NET MVC, but also works great with WebMatrix and with Razor. And so we showed off building kind of an e-commerce site with that. And then Niels Hardvig from the Embraco group, which is an open source CMS product for Microsoft for mm-hmm. ASP.NET, came on and showed off some cool Embraco stuff, and specifically talked about some of the integration work they're doing to run well inside Azure, and showed off a bunch of great sites that are built on top of Embraco today. So it was a pretty busy keynote.
Mm-hmm. Now, so this tooling update, this is not a new version of MVC3. I don't have to reinstall anything on my server, right? What's the difference between MVC3 and what we released today?
Yeah, the tooling update has a bunch of pretty cool things, but they're tooling specific. So the actual MVC3 binary that's in the, if you download the latest MVC3 from our website right now, has not changed between the January MVC3 release and today's release.
Okay.
So that means that if you already have a project going, you don't need to update it or upgrade it. You just install the new tooling support, and you'll get more tooling features.
Okay.
And likewise, it means that if you already have a deployed app or you're about to deploy onto a server, there's nothing to install on the server. It's the same MVC3 runtime that we had in January. But basically, the new stuff is project templates, the scaffolding support, some of the new HTML5 support. It just kind of lights up Visual Studio in nicer ways.
Mm-hmm. And there seems to be more and more extensibility. Like I'm seeing, we saw the extensibility in early versions of MVC. MVC3 had lots of new extensibility points for things like dependency injection. Now you can extend the tooling too. So those scaffolders, you can plug in there as mm-hmm. well. And that dialogue, when you say add controller, that could be your company's specific code as well.
Yeah, one of the things that we're kind of very consciously trying to do is recognize the fact that out of the box we'll never do everything, or we might not do things the way people want them to, mm-hmm. Or some set of people might not want them to. And so, you know, we're trying to make sure across the product that there's extensibility hooks, both in the runtime and then also in the tooling, so that anyone can go ahead and extend and customize them. And with things like our NuGet package manager, makes it really easy for you to go ahead and acquire extensions that light up. So they could be new view engines in the MVC sense, or it could be dependency injection containers. you know, in today's talk, you showed off the cool scaffolding support that's built in. And so out of the box, you get really nice EF scaffolding support inside ASP.NET MVC now. But you can go and say, hey, I want to install package MVC scaffolding. I think a little bit later on, Steve Sanderson's going to be on Channel 9 Live, where we'll talk about it. And that will basically just extend the dialogue and add a whole bunch more templating options. So if you want to scaffold against a repository interface, you can do that. If you want to scaffold against in Hibernate or any other data access framework, you can. You know, I think the combination of having the extensibility hooks and then especially having NuGet built in, really kind of, it's sort of like peanut butter and jelly together. Mm-hmm. It kind of goes together really nicely, and I think it opens up a lot of possibilities.
Now, we're seeing NuGet integration in Visual Studio. We're seeing NuGet integration into the administration tools in Web Matrix and Web Pages. Both NuGet and Orchard are owned by Outer Curve, but we're kind of putting them deep into the product. Like today, we announced Orchard 1.1. Why does Microsoft announce Orchard 1.1 when it's an Outer Curve-owned project?
Yeah, well, so for people that aren't familiar with Outer Curve, it's an open source foundation. It used to be called the CodePlex Foundation, but we kind of they renamed themselves because they thought it was a little confusing with the CodePlex.com site. But basically, it's an open source foundation, similar to the Apache Foundation, if you're familiar with that. We're working with them to basically release more and more Microsoft technologies under a open source license that they manage and maintain. And so the nice thing about that is it's they are independent from Microsoft. So it's the board members and there's a president and chairman of the foundation. They're not Microsoft employees. But it's a convenient way for us to actually easily get open source projects out there. And so we've been sponsoring a number of projects through Outer Curve. There are other projects that are not sponsored by Microsoft that are part of Outer Curve. But things like Orchard and NuGet do have Microsoft employees contributing code, but we release it through the Outer Curve Foundation. And then their license is pretty nice and permissive in the sense that we can go ahead and both us and anyone else that wants to can go ahead and ship those products or those open source projects with our commercial products in a clean way. And so things like NuGet and Orchard, that's great examples of where we're building them in directly into Visual Studio, into Web Matrix. And there's kind of a pretty nice open source commercial gelling there.
You think we'll see more of that? I mean, this seems to be a movement in the sense that more and more things are either open source or source opened at Microsoft.
Yeah.
Sounds like we don't really see a reason. If it doesn't need to be closed source, why not make it open?
Yeah, you know, that's definitely kind of one of our, you know, one of the reasons why we've sponsored the Open Curve Foundation and are kind of working closely with them. Again, they are independent, but we found that, you know, having kind of a process in place with them that allows us to actually, you know, create or sponsor new open source projects using our technology, you know, allow other people to contribute code as well, but it gives us kind of a nice legal framework as well as just a process framework that allows us to pretty quickly come up with an idea, propose it to Outer Curve, and if there's supportive of it, we can go ahead and create an open source project for it. And so NuGet's a great example of that. You know, Orchard and some of the other things that we're doing are great examples of that as well. And, you know, we've seen, I saw Miguel walking around earlier. You know,
Miguel
de Acasa. It's great that, you know, we were able to almost immediately get Mono support. And there are people checking in fixes to make sure it worked well on Mono immediately. That's great. That's the whole reason that we want to be able to put stuff out under an open source license is to be able to get code contributions from lots of people to make the product better.
Speaking of contributions, your contributions can be tweeted to #CH9Live. We got a question here from my good friend Irish Chieftain who wants to know, we see a lot of MVC in these demos. MVC's been like the darling child, but would you start a new project with web forms, and what kind of innovations are we going to see in web forms?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, a lot of people, you know, it's funny because people used to say, oh, ASP.NET is just web forms, and then say, oh, you only talk about MVC now. You know, the reality is anything that's new sometimes gets a lot of love and lots of attention. And MVC has been new, which is part of the reason why you hear a lot of people talk about it. You know, it's also something, because it's new, that a lot of people get interested and excited about. But people should feel very comfortable with the roadmap for web forms. We're going to be talking more about the next release of web forms kind of in the weeks and months ahead. There's actually a talk here at Mix that I think we're going to show off some of the new features. But there's some really cool stuff coming in web forms. Some of the things are, you know, our ideas, frankly, that we've we first tried out either in WebMatrix or in MVC. There's some really cool model binding support coming to WebForms. Lets you take a grid control or any of our data controls and easily bind to methods in your CodeBehind class, as opposed to having to use an object data source. And so the code's much cleaner. Some really nice model-based validation features that are part of that. A whole bunch of other features I'm not going to spoil. People go should go watch the talk as opposed to me stealing all their thunder. But you're going to see some really cool features coming in WebForms. And so absolutely, you should feel comfortable creating a new project in WebForms. You know, ultimately, it really is about what do developers feel most comfortable with. And you know, that's why we basically have three options now for how you do ASP.NET development: web pages, web forms, and MVC. Mm-hmm. And we think all three are perfectly valid. There's, you know, the majority of our ASP.NET customers are today using web forms for new projects. And so, you know, the reason we created MVC and web pages was there were people that didn't want web forms, and they liked attributes of MVC, and there were people that say, hey, I just want single pages, and so that's why we created that as well. All three are perfectly valid, but it really comes down to whatever you feel most comfortable. But, you know, one of the things I think was we touched on in the keynote a little bit, and it's just worth reemphasizing, is the core investments we're making, to C# or VB language investments, IIS Express, in the cases of Razor, with both web pages and MVC, we support it. You know, things like some of the HTML5 JavaScript library work that we're coming out with shortly, a bunch of the CSS work that we're going to be coming out shortly with ASP.NET. You know, all those features work across all three of those different approaches. SQL CE, we showed off in the keynote a lot today in the context of Orchard, in the context of WebMatrix, in the context of MVC. You'll see demos this week in the context of WebForms. You know, we're trying to come up with a model where you can learn a core set of skills regardless of what type of ASP.NET project you create, and those skills flow across all of them. And the investments we make as we come out with something new can also apply to all of them. So definitely feel comfortable with WebForms and where it's going.
Do you think that people overemphasize this kind of like pick one kind of thing? Because you, like you said, you've got Entity Framework, you've got SQL Compact, you've got NuGet, you've got Razor and two of the three. I mean, it's ASP.NET underneath. And actually, we just launched a new site, www.asp.net. If you go to click on Getting Started, mm-hmm. everything from there down is all new. And there's actually three new videos that will show you how to create an application in 5 minutes in each of those three technologies. So if you're either new to ASP.NET, or perhaps you are a web forms person who wants to look into MVC, or an MVC person who wants to look into web pages, go up, watch each of those five-minute videos. And then we've got tutorials and basically a complete free book for all three of those technologies.
And that's something you're going to see over the next couple of weeks and months ahead, is a lot more videos, a lot more tutorials, really trying to take the ASP.NET website and kind of have a nice prescriptive 0 to 60 kind of model for each of the three approaches, so that, like, hey, if you just want to dip your toe into another water, it's great. If you want a refresher based on what you're doing, or you're building a site and you've been using the technology for years, but you're like, oh, what's the best security best practice for this?
Right.
You know, you want to have a really nice learn page on that site that you can go to, quickly find the information you're looking for. And so you're going to see a lot more love coming to the site, a lot more content, and kind of a much better information architecture that makes it easier to find stuff.
Mm-hmm. Question from Twitter from RD3D. I'm not sure if you're allowed to have one of these. This was tweeted to @CH9Live. Are you allowed to have a favorite single technology? Or is there some level at Microsoft where you're no longer allowed to have a favorite technology?
Yeah.
The world will shift. They're hanging on your next word, sir.
Yeah, no, it's a dangerous question. You know, it's like, you know, which of your kids is your favorite? You can't possibly answer that without getting in trouble. And you know, the reality is, I like all of them.
I think ASP.NET would be a fair thing to say, sir.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I always have a soft spot in my heart for ASP.NET. Because of all the technologies that I've worked on, that's probably the one I wrote the most code for, personally. But you know, that's more historical. That's not like some strategic thing. That's just more historical, because that was something I wrote a lot. You know, I worked on pretty hard.
Yeah. So there's the personal investment, actual hands on the key, you know, on the keyboard.
Yeah, you know, the thing, I have a lucky job in the sense of, you know, every given day I get to play with something new. And so, you know, today was fun because I got to talk a lot about the server technologies, you know, ASP.NET, IIS, Visual Studio, WebMatrix, Orchard, and more. You know, tomorrow I get to do a keynote where I get to talk about, you know, Windows Phone and Silverlight 5 and Visual Studio tools and a bunch of pretty cool stuff that I'm excited to be able to show off for the first time tomorrow. And on the plane ride home on Thursday, you know, I'll probably be playing something else on my laptop. So I'm very fortunate in that sense. The thing we're trying to do is just try to make, how do we make all these products work great? I think people often look for, like, what is the one true answer for, you know, the universe and life? And especially in the development space, there is no one true answer. I think the thing that we're trying to do, and I think we've done a pretty decent job at, is, you know, how do we make sure that the skills you learn apply in multiple different dimensions? Mm-hmm. And so it's not a case where you're learning a new language and a new framework and a new way of doing something for specific task foo, and then you go work on task bar and you have to learn a completely new language, skill set, et cetera.
Right.
I think it's great that we've taken Silverlight and we're running it on Windows Phone. We were able to take, hey, you learned a whole bunch of great Silverlight skills. Guess what? You can build phone apps and vice versa. I think it's good in the same way that we did WebForms and MVC, as well as Web Pages, where we could say, oh, there's a core set of skills. You know, IIS, once you learn them, you can use any web framework, including PHP on it. That's something we're trying to do across Visual Studio and .NET, is kind of how do we kind of build it in such a way that you know, you can sort of throw yourself at any problem, and there's a really good tool in the shed, so to speak, that you can pull out and do stuff with. Mm-hmm. And even if you've never used that tool, you're pretty familiar with the attributes and the characteristics of it.
It seems like that I like this metaphor of Lego pieces. Like, in the past, like maybe, you know, 8-10 years ago, there were big Legos and little Legos, and one project would be very low level, and one project would be very kind of like, use the Legos this way. And it seems like things are starting to get a little bit more organized and more interoperable.
Yep.
Is that just the way that the world is going, or was there conscious thought behind the, let's make these pieces all interoperate better together?
It was a little bit of both. I mean, there definitely was a conscious thought. I mean, I've been trying to give guidance to the team for the last year or two, where it's before we kind of create new things, let's really ask ourselves the question of, isn't there something else out there that we've already done that kind of does 80% of it, and can we just kind of make it better? And some of the feedback I kind of gave on both projects that my team ran, and then also projects like, say, the Entity Framework Code First model. I kind of met with that team for a lot last spring, and said, hey, you know, I love what you're doing here, and here, but this is kind of different. This is kind of different. You know, can we kind of incorporate some of the positive aspects? Mm-hmm. Let's keep it compatible. Let's not actually have a completely different model, but, you know, incorporate some of the feedback that people had. And I think they did a phenomenal job of coming up with Entity Framework Code First. And we were actually at one point looking at, like, yet another ORM, and it was like, you know, my God, we have too many data access technologies as it is. Let's not create another one.
Yeah.
That is something conscious that we're trying to do, which is, you know, how can we share those pieces? You know, the irony with something like Razor, which I think a lot of devs that are using ASP.NET and MVC just rave about. And other people are like, oh, so glad you built Razor for MVC. The irony is we didn't actually build Razor for MVC. Razor was intended for something completely different than MVC. It was designed for sort of the ASP.NET Web Pages and Web Matrix world.
Yeah.
And, for the first 6 or 9 months that we were working on Razor, it did not work with MVC.
So Razor was its own thing?
It was its own thing. And, you know, the team would show me Razor from time to time. And it kind of, Razor evolved in a really, really nice way. But it was, you know, I was myself pretty dubious the first 6 months. You know, I'll claim full credit. I didn't see the dream, so to speak, for the first couple of months. I thought, it's cool, but it's different. And do we need something different? I kind of pushed the team on that. And then at some point, I think it was like April or May of last year, I saw a Razor demo. And it was just suddenly kind of like a light bulb went on. It was like, wow, this is cool.
I did the same thing because I thought it was a new language, and I was like, I don't want to learn another language. Don't make me learn. And then I realized that it's just C# with an at sign in front of it.
Yeah,
and then
that was kind of my aha as well. And I went, whoa, okay, now I like this a lot. And, the team built it. It was not me.
Yeah.
But it was suddenly I got it. And then, you know, one of the things that we said was like, hey, what's the plan to make it work with MVC? And people said, well, you know, we can make it work. We haven't done the work yet. And I said, well, you know, let's make sure the first MVC 3 preview introduces it. And so we, for those people that think Razor was built specifically for MVC, it was actually built for something else, and we kind of incorporated it. And you'll see similar things with model binding in WebForms and vNext. It feels very, very natural and totally integrated inside web forms. But it borrows pretty heavily for some of the model binding learnings that we've learned with MVC. And same with routing between web forms and MVC. And you'll see more and more features show up like that where it might start over here, but if it's a good idea, how do we sprinkle it in lots of different places so you can get maximum leverage out of it?
Well, yeah, like people talk about, you mentioned routing, you mentioned model binding, there's pieces like ASP.NET dynamic data, the data annotation stuff, you see that throughout, right? Data annotations show up throughout all of different technologies. One of the things I thought that you said was interesting is that you're looking for different pieces that are out there that you can utilize. We saw Modernizer ship today with ASP.NET MVC3, which is an open source library made by, not Microsoft. Mm-hmm. We didn't go and write our own Modernizer. Are we going to see more times when, let me rephrase, let me be more pointed. Are we getting to a point now where Microsoft will say, this already exists and this is really cool, let's point people to that as opposed to writing it ourselves? And what will that mean for development at Microsoft?
Yeah, I think that's... that's definitely a trend we've been going down in the last couple of years. I mean, a big part of our kind of support of jQuery was along those lines where we sort of said, I remember sitting in reviews kind of 2 years ago, and people were talking about, hey, we're going to spend the next 6 months and we're going to have all these features. And they sort of asking the question, how does this compare with jQuery? And we're like, we'll almost have everything jQuery has at this point. but why? Why are we doing this?
Yeah.
Why don't we just ship jQuery? And at the time, it was that was a big deal. And I'd say each release we're taking on more open source and shipping it, and we're becoming more comfortable with it. I remember the first time, we talked to John Rezig and said, hey, we'd love to be able to contribute some code, and he said, well, great, go to GitHub, fork jQuery, add some stuff into it, and then post it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the team and I were just like, whoa, the headline, Microsoft forks jQuery, is not the headline we want.
Right. Microsoft makes pull requests is the headline we want.
And and he said, no, that's how it works. You guys do it, you send me the pull request, and I'll look at it, and if I like it, I'll take it. And I think, over time we've kind of evolved now, we have a pretty good cadence there. And for something like Modernizer,
Was it a big a deal? I remember all of the legal wrangling and all the discussions, because at Microsoft, which was a little late to the open source game, I think is a fair statement. There was what are we doing? We're blazing new trails, But now we're kind of catching up. Was it moving mountains to get Modernizer in there, or was it just we've done jQuery, it's a similar kind of thing?
It's a similar thing. That jQuery was a little bit, not moving mountains, but it was, the first time you do sort of a process on something, you're kind of blazing the trail, and our legal department, who's been very supportive of this, but they're kind of like, well, we don't actually have any precedent for doing this, and I've learned with lawyers, if there's no precedent of doing something, it takes a little longer to get something done. Once there's that precedent, then it's a fairly well-known process how to do it. And so for Modernizer, we do what we call a kind of a copyright scrub and a quick kind of look through the code to make sure that there isn't obvious pieces that have been, duplicated from other libraries without permission.
Right.
And so, it takes about a week or 10 days now to get kind of a full legal thumbs up on shipping something. And so, that's great, because it basically means we can decide we want to use something and relatively quickly turn around and get the thumbs up for it and really start embracing it. And what we're trying to do is how can we take advantage of the open source projects out there? But at the same time, how can we add unique Microsoft value? And so, having Modernizer automatically added to the MVC, project template means that, when you create a new MVC3 project using today's tooling update, if you click the use HTML semantic tags, you get nice VS IntelliSense on HTML5, you get markup that's going to work in every browser. And so it's a huge win for ASP.NET developers. And it's hopefully a win for the Modernizer project, because it gives them a lot more visibility. And that hopefully is a win-win for everyone.
Yeah, it is. All right, so we've got a minute and a half left, sir. So you got to keep it brief.
Sure.
My good friend and very popular Niner, AL3891, wants to know how much of the code you wrote is still in ASP.NET.
I think they pulled most of it out. I wrote the original prototype. So the original prototype was written mostly in C++ and Java and JavaScript. This is before .NET existed, actually. And the CLR came along at the same time, and it was like a six-person project, and we sort of said, hey, you know, we're three people, you're six people, we could get together and we'll be nine people. And
pretty complicated math, sir.
It was pretty complicated, and that was kind of how .NET started. Yeah. A lot of people say, like, big strategic vision, and the reality is it was just like nine of us.
What was your job title at that point, before .NET existed? Were you, like, Joe Tester or Scott Tester?
No, I mean, I was like Scott, Mark, and Dimitri. That was like, we didn't have a team, it was just three of us. And they just sort of said, go off and, you know, we think this web thing's going to be big, go figure it out. And so we kind of built it, and I think the error pages are still mine, and so the irony is whenever I see, the yellow screen of death
yellow
error
screen
page,
of death, it's you.
It was not my code that caused the error page, but I think, you know,
I'm going to make a bookmarklet after this that is going to take a yellow screen of death and turn it into the red polo shirt of death.
It's always great when you walk.
A challenge to the Channel 9 Live people, the first person who makes a bookmarklet that turns a yellow screen of death into a red polo of death. We'll get a prize.
And it's great when you walk through the airport or something and you see like some screen, yellow screen of death comes out. I did that.
Awesome. All right, folks, keep bringing your questions to #CH9Live. We're going to leave Scott Gu right now. We're going to come back with Phil Hack and Steve Sanderson. Stay with us.
Thank you.